Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 116 of Season 5 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again on this special episode, this special Saturday edition, is Sean German of the Next Scene Podcast. Welcome back, Sean.
All right, thanks. Thank you for having me back.
And Sean, I just wanted to say, you know, I love you.
And I just wanted to say, they told me there were terrorists at the airport.
Okay.
There we go. Perfect.
There we go. That works. Works well. Works well. Again, we know that someone is spending the night on the couch, but who knows? Actually, you know what? It's Holly that actually responded that way. It usually, you know, works the other way around. It's usually the guy who puts his foot in his mouth and doesn't respond by saying "I love you" back. You know,
yeah,
it's like, "I love you. Oh, I'm watching the football game," or something like that. You know, but they told me there were terrorists at the airport.
Yeah, they kind of flipped the script in terms of, the man and the woman and who's reluctant to talk about their feelings and love and everything.
That's right. And it doesn't even, they didn't even change it. They didn't flip it in the script because as we pointed out, it's not even in the script. They ad-libbed it.
Yeah. Right. So. And, speaking of sort of flipping the script or, doing things unexpected, we see here that Sam Coleman is sort of like the anti-Thornburg. So at the end of the last minute, we saw her pointing out to the cameraman, John and Holly embracing. And here to start this minute, she is covering up the camera lens with her hand to give the couple some privacy. She realizes, you know, not everything is fit for broadcast and everything is meant to be a public moment.
But the irony of it is she's the one who pointed it out and told him to start filming. Right. You know, it's like, go film that. No, wait a second. I changed my mind. Don't do that.
Yeah. She's struck by the emotion of the moment. But yeah,
that's right. So minute 116 begins with Coleman stopping the recording and ends with Lorenzo checking the facts with John. So, you know, as you pointed out, it starts off with, Coleman continuing her comment from yesterday where she goes, "Yep, it sure is." And then, you know, she puts her hand and covers the lens of the camera, which most people do by accident, you know. People don't usually do that on purpose. So it works. It works. You know, again, she's getting really sentimental here. And then, you know, it's actually funny the way that all three of them, you know, the cameraman, Sam, and the sound man, they all like smile together, you know, which makes it look like it's some like dopey comedy, you know, where you have characters that are just going to laugh in a funny way or guffaw, I guess you can say.
So. Right. But I guess that's sort of maybe an introduction to what this minute is about. And this is really like a big contrast. And I talked for 115, I talked about kind of the theme of family, you know, being together for the holidays and John and Holly being reunited. And then this minute is the comedy minute. This is breaking up the tension or the suspense or whatever you had, you know, if you were between the excitement of, the climax of the terrorist plot line or the emotion of them being reunited. Now we're going to break that up with some bits. Like, this is the funny minute. This is the comedy minute.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely is. But the comedy minute starts off with John says it again. He's trying to get an answer out of her. So he says, "Oh, I love you so much." Mm-hmm. And once again, she doesn't respond properly. And she goes, "Oh, John, why does this keep happening to us?"
Why does this keep happening to us? Yeah.
Once again, she does not know how to respond and say, "I love you." Maybe that's the answer of why they're not together in Die Hard with a Vengeance. John just says, "The hell with it. I keep telling her I love her. And all she talks about are terrorists and how we're spending the holidays." Yeah. I don't know. Something's wrong here. This is a key moment.
That's their dynamic in a nutshell.
That's right. This is a key moment in the McLean family time. You know, John and Holly are just not on the same page. John is all about the love, and Holly is now all about the terrorists, and John's done with terrorists. He's killed enough of them.
Yeah, I guess I take it like John's a glass half full kind of guy. He's optimistic. He's like, okay, we're reunited, we're back together. I love you. And and Holly's just the pessimist. She's, there's terrorists at the airport, and why does this keep happening? It's like, well, yeah, okay, it happened.
She's
It's
harping
over
on it.
now.
Stop
We'll get
harping
over
on
it.
it. That's
Yeah.
right. Stop harping. Move on.
Let's let it go.
Move on, Holly. That's it. The terrorists are
Come on,
dead.
read the
There
room.
are no terrorists here. We'll have to go back to New York to find more terrorists. We talked yesterday about the fact that each airplane, they could only have one airplane from each airline, showing up there. So apparently terrorists can only go to, one particular one city at a time. So now that their terrorists are dead in Washington, there won't be terrorists in Washington anymore. Now you have to
Yeah,
move
they
on to
solved
another
that
city.
problem.
That's right.
Exactly.
2 years ago they got rid of the terrorist problem in LA. Now they're getting rid of the terrorist problem in DC. Where are they going to go next? Who knows?
Yeah.
Actually, the
Well,
truth
this,
is
do they
they
just
are
keep
back in
moving on
DC.
city by yeah, just
But
keep moving city by city, and then eventually we'll rid the entire world of terrorism. They'll just run out of cities.
that's right. That's right. Unfortunately,
It's just science.
that idea just doesn't work because in the fourth movie they're back in Washington. So I don't know. And yeah,
Yeah,
maybe
yeah.
not. Maybe not. But then they'd leave America because there's no terrorists in America anymore. They need to go to Russia. So,
Exactly. Exactly.
All right, that's the way it works. So I mean, do you think there's an answer to her question about why does this keep happening to us?
No, I think it's just it's well, one is with their lifestyle and previously being separated when she moved to the West Coast and John stayed behind, there'd be a lot of traveling. I think if if you fly enough, eventually your plane's gonna get hijacked or something's gonna happen. If you spend enough time in airports, eventually the terrorist is gonna show up. So maybe it is they just travel more often than other people. So that's why this particular scenario held out. Of course, that doesn't explain Die Hard One in particular, the first film or some of the others. So I guess just it's just the odds. They're just unlucky. That's what I'm not going to subscribe to that. It's not their fault. I don't think they're doing anything to bring it on themselves.
That's right. I have a simpler answer. The first movie made a lot of money,
What's
so they needed to make another one. That's what
that?
it comes down to. These are characters who are being brought into this scenario because it's a money-making scenario. That's the only real answer.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, I was thinking of it in terms of like for the characters in that world, but certainly in our world,
Yeah, that's
why do the
right.
writers and producers keep doing this to these people? It's because it makes a lot of money. Apparently we like watching the McClane suffer.
Well, as we know,
It's all our
we
fault.
like watching anyone suffer in these type of situations because they've been making diehard type movies for decades now, because everyone likes them. So I guess that's why.
I
So
guess
yeah,
that's why.
they then at this point they continue to hug, and then John has a great idea and goes, "Let's go home." Now, is he forgetting that going home means they have to get back on a plane? Because he didn't say, "Let's go to
I
your
think so,
parents."
unless he.
He doesn't say, "Let's go to your parents.
Right.
Let's go to a motel." Let's go
Let's
home.
go home. So jump on another, a 5-hour flight into LA.
Or maybe this is his subtle way of saying that I want to move back to New York.
Right.
Come on. We went to LA, we had to deal with terrorists. We're now in Washington at your parents, we have to deal with terrorists. Let's go back to New York. New York is the safest place. We're not going to have to worry about terrorists showing up there. We're all good.
I assume since we haven't had any, I hope I'm right on this, that we haven't had any Die Hard prequels. That means they never encountered any terrorists while they were in New York. So maybe that's what he's suggesting. Let's go back home to New York where there are no
Where it's safe.
terrorists, where terrorist attacks never happen. We'll be safe.
That's right. It could be we're thinking of good
That is
reasons.
clearly what he is saying.
That's right. We're thinking of plausible reasoning for everything that's being said here. So why not? The scene changes slightly, and then we hear a man scream, "Get in the truck!" And we like see, you know, people that are deplaning. We see someone that is like in a that's been injured. You know, that they're putting in a you know, they're gonna wheel him, they're putting him in a stretcher that they're gonna be wheeling him into the ambulance. Now, what happened to this person? Was this someone who was, you know, maybe not in their seat when they were landing?
Yeah, I don't know if it could be an injury from turbulence. It could be they kind of went the wrong way down. Maybe they twisted an ankle or something at the bottom of the slide. Could be just you know, a panic attack or something. Just reacting to the stress of the situation. You know, we don't know.
That's right. I think it would have been great if they had that like one of the terrorists on that cot, you know, just giving us, showing us that okay, you know, one of the guys actually made it out. He jumped off the plane before it exploded earlier this week, and you know, and now he's being taken by ambulance away. You know, that would have been cool to see that, but not. And then as the stretcher moves away, we see someone walking towards us barefoot. Which makes absolutely no sense. You know, everyone else has shoes. You know, you can pause it at the 24-second mark, and you get to see like the Footloose version of this movie, where you just see everyone's feet and their shoes. You know, you see people in boots and you see people in sneakers, and then you see someone completely barefoot. I think she's wearing stockings because it doesn't look like you can see her toes. But it doesn't really matter. Stockings are still not going to help.
There's stockings or pantyhose or something. I wonder if she was wearing heels, like high-heeled shoes, and they were worried it would tear or get caught in the slide, you know, when they were, you know, exiting the plane. And so she had to take her shoes off, because I think all the shoes we see, like you say, are sneakers or boots or some other kind of flat shoe. I don't think we see anyone wearing heels. So, maybe they're directing passengers, if they've got pointy shoes, you know, pointy heels, that they've got to take them off before they can slide down the ramp to exit the plane.
That's a great – I never even thought about that.
I'm telling you, everything in this film makes sense. This is the perfect screenplay.
It's not there Casablanca, but, you know, it's close.
No. It's close. Maybe close second, yeah.
That's really interesting.
Die Hard 2 is the Casablanca of action films.
Yes.
So that's how I would explain it. Is why is this one person that we see in bare feet?
Okay, well,
because she was wearing heels and she couldn't slide down the road.
Okay, you are completely right with what you just said. I just looked it up, and it says the NTSB found you're supposed to take your shoes off before a plane crash. That they instructed passengers to remove their shoes to prevent damage to the evacuation slides during evacuation. And they basically say that everyone should take off their shoes, not just people with high heels. That's really interesting. Everyone. That's what they say, but interesting. And I also found a site that says that flight attendants are supposed to remove their shoes when the captain announces brace for impact. But the problem with that is then, you know, when the plane has its impact, then all those shoes are going to start flying all over the place.
Yeah. Do they have, is there like a shoe cabinet, a compartment? Because, yeah, you don't want shoes flying around the cabin while you're attempting a landing.
That's right. And come on, anyone who's seen Castaway knows that you want to keep your shoes on because otherwise you're going to be stuck having to try and, you know, use someone else's shoes that you're going to have to open up. With the blades of an ice skate. I don't know.
The blades of an ice skate. Or you're stuck walking through the snow in bare feet. Or
that's
you're
right.
Just stocking feet.
That's right. You know, you'd think that maybe she could...
At least one passenger on this plane paid attention to directions and took her shoes off.
That's right. But we didn't even hear those directions. We didn't hear them say, everyone take off your shoes, especially if you're wearing high heels.
Yeah. They're like, we have an announcement. Attention, please, all passengers... they told, you know, there are terrorists at the airport, and by the way, also take off your shoes.
That's right.
We have to assume that announcement was made.
Of course, because it needs to make everything plausible. That's the only way you can do it. So she's walking through the snow, through the fake snow, you know, and you know, she is holding her sweater close to her, you know, because it shows, mm-hmm. she's making it seem as if she's really cold as she's walking. And yeah. then she yeah. stops, and we hear someone say, "Somebody help me, please."
Yeah, it's like a turtle on his back. There is our old buddy Thornburg.
Yeah,
laying down in the snow.
Yeah, which makes me wonder how he got there. You know, if he was so incapacitated, so how did he get down the slide, and how did he end up? Let's say 15 feet away from the airplane on his back. You know, mm-hmm. don't you think someone would have tried to help him? Even though we know he's an ant, but that's fine. You know, you'd yeah. still think that the stewardesses or somebody would, you know, or let's even go further. If he's coming down the chute, then you have the firemen and the paramedics and stuff like that. They see a guy who can't walk. He's the guy they should be putting in a stretcher.
Yeah. Yeah. We just literally at the beginning of this minute or earlier in the minute, we saw someone being wheeled away on a stretcher. And yeah, it would make sense. The, you know, the local rescue teams and the firemen, you know, here in DC, they wouldn't know how bad of a person this Richard Thornburg is.
Maybe so they do. They would just see it. Maybe he's nationally syndicated. So he's a nationally syndicated.
That's possible.
I don't know.
That's possible. Yeah. So, okay. So there was an announcement on the plane. Attention passengers, your attention, please. There are terrorists at the airport.
There were Take terrorists off your at the shoes. Airport.
And by the way, Richard Thornburg is a dick, so, you know, if you see him flat on his back, do not help him under any circumstances.
That's right. Let him fend for himself.
Yeah. Let him fend for himself.
That's right. Then he goes...
But yes, so he is on his back in the snow. He's asking for help. He is being ignored by all the fire personnel, the emergency responders. Everyone else is completely ignoring him. And the old woman from the plane comes yeah. by.
And
is
he goes,
she going to help him? Is she going to...
And he goes, "Somebody help me, please. Oh, honey, help me up here, please." And she just looks down at him and goes,
and literally steps over him.
Yes.
And like a big alpha move, like, doesn't just walk away. Like, oh,
right.
And of now, course, if, you know, Thornburg is Thornburg to the end. Like, it, I find that patronizing, that, "Oh, honey."
That's
like,
right.
No. This is why no one wants to help.
And if you look carefully at the 28-second mark on this minute, you can see her leg right next to his body as she's about to walk over him. You know, he's got his hand up, and you see her dress and her leg as she's about to just walk over him. You know, she calls him an asshole and then just steps right over him. And he tries to get up and falls right back down, and you see, like, his eyes popping out of his head. Because it's just too much for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then
he can't believe it.
That's right. He's saying, "Even this old lady won't help me. Come on." So, and then the shot changes, and we see Marvin coming closer in his golf cart.
Yeah.
And he starts screaming, "Hey, officer, hey, come on, hey, 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 hop on in there, get your missus in." I mean, this is definitely comic relief, no question about it. You're completely right. And it mimics the end of Die Hard 1, you know, with Argyle, you know, driving up mm-hmm. with the battered limb.
With a golf cart in this instance instead of the limo, but a similar thing. Yeah, and then I like the line he's got, "I'll be damned if I'm going to clean up this mess."
That's right. He goes, "What do you say, Marv?" And he goes, "I'll be damned if I'm going to clean up this mess." And then he's just laughing. Yeah. And, you know, John continues to embrace Holly as they walk towards the back of the golf cart. And don't you think Holly should have asked him, "Who is this guy?"
You'd think that would come up. Like, "This guy seems to know you. Like, how long have you been in DC that you're making friends?"
That's right. I mean, again, when if you compare it to the first movie, so, you know, Argyle at least is in a limo, So she can quickly make the assumption that, okay, this is the limo driver. I don't know how he's here. I don't know how he, you know, why the limo is bashed, the front of the limo is bashed in. But okay, it's a limo driver who's going to be taking us somewhere. You know, but here, it's some guy on a golf cart. He's a production assistant.
Golf cart at the airport.
Yeah, I don't know. Just a little strange. So she doesn't even care what it is. I guess she trusts John implicitly. Doesn't really make a difference, you know. And then the shot changes, and we get to see a police car show up, and Lorenzo quickly gets out of it. I mean, he's moving around quickly. He's finally, you know, showing up. You know, we haven't seen him in a while. Yep. Now, actually, I want to go back 1 second before you get there. When Marvin pulls up to them, you see that there are people in the background that are embracing and hugging each other. You know, you have basically three people hugging each other next to the turbine of one of the airplanes at the 38-second mark. And then you have like another two people that are hugging each other in front of the turbine, and then you see in front of the ambulance other people hugging each other, and then next to the ambulance there are two couples hugging each other. And then even behind John and Holly, on the left, you see people hugging. I guess that's what everyone does. They're getting off the plane, and everyone's hugging each other.
Just everyone's hugging.
It's a hug
fest. When the golf cart comes to rest, even framed between Marvin, you've got kind of Marvin on the right, and then Holly and John on the left, and then right in between them, we can see a couple hugging.
That's right.
But and then also more people hugging off to the left. There's the people you mentioned that he passes in the golf cart that are hugging. There's a lot of hugging going on.
This is a Washington, D.C. Hug Fest. Hug Fest 1990. You know, I don't know. It's just funny. They must have told all the extras, just start hugging each other. And actually, the couple that we see in between, that's framed in between them, the woman looks like she's laughing her ass off. You know, yeah. She's like, this is what they want us to do. I'm going to be in a movie just hugging you. Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
just hug. Well, that's the thing, you know, like in Europe or some places, like you meet someone, when you greet someone for, you know, first time in the day, you kiss them on the cheek, you know, one kiss on each cheek. In D.C., the protocol is
hugging. There you go.
Is the three-way hug.
That's right.
Yeah. So just, you know, just keeping up with local tradition.
That's right. And then, you know, after they have this conversation, and so if Marvin isn't going to clean it up, who is going to clean it up?
Who is going to clean up this?
Someone's got to clean up the mess. And Marvin needs a place to live. So, you know, if they ask him to clean up, he's going to be cleaning it up.
Yeah.
I don't think he's in a position to, you know, to refuse them.
to object an order. Yeah. I mean, he can help, but it's obviously a lot. Maybe, I don't know, does FEMA get involved? I don't know if, you know, the federal administration in charge of like emergency cleanup, you know, the folks that come in when there's like a hurricane or an earthquake, do they cover acts of terrorism?
Yeah.
Do they cover terrorists at the airport?
They probably do now, but the question is whether they did in 1990.
Yeah.
That's the question. So then the shot changes, and a police car shows up. And as the police car is showing up, I don't know if you noticed this, there's like a little there's a yellow truck, and there is a woman sitting on the side there. Okay, and there's a fireman and I guess a paramedic that are holding her leg.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, speaking of, like, I guess she twisted an ankle coming down the slide getting off the plane.
Or it's a pickup line. Yeah, literally.
Is she proposing? Yeah, so yeah, she's sitting. I guess it's I don't know what it's, some kind of construction or emergency vehicle, but it's big enough that there are steps up. Looks like you have to step up to get into the cab to drive the thing. And she's sitting on the steps, and it looks like this guy is on a knee, holding her foot. Maybe there's like a was it was there a Cinderella type subplot. That was,
maybe
deleted from the final cut, that he's you know, trying to fit her for a slipper.
It could be.
Yeah, I didn't notice that until you mentioned it. But once you mention it, now I can't avoid seeing it.
Exactly, it's one of those things that you'll never unsee. And it's great. But the question is whether, you know, she has the right answer to I love you. You know, will she say, why does this keep happening to us? Or will she say, they told us there were terrorists at the airport. And he's like, damn it, I'm trying to propose. I don't know. And the police car comes to a stop. And there's a cop that gets out on the left-hand side and on the right-hand side. And then Lorenzo gets out on the left-hand side. And he screams over to McClane. He goes, McClane. And he goes, you get this parking ticket in front of my airport? Holding up the parking ticket. Now, if you look at the shot of John and Holly as they're looking at them, first of all, Holly has blood on her face and her hair is like bloodily matted, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
You know, and it makes it look as if she went through something. And the only thing she went through is, you know, having her husband, smear all his blood all over her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I'm assuming that's all John's blood, but there is quite a bit of it. As you said, like her hair is quite matted.
He is
bleeding all over her.
That's
how much blood has he lost? Like, do we need to worry about John at this point? In terms of just the blood loss.
Yeah, I don't know. But he gets to share a blanket with Holly. You know, which is great that these blankets are large enough. Because usually, you know, like if you're in hotels and they have like small towels and small blankets.
Yeah.
You know, so at least they were thoughtful enough to give them a blanket for two.
Yeah, right. Apparently, and fortunately they have blankets for two that they can hand out.
Especially since they probably only needed to give, because Holly's the only one who got off the plane. So does that mean that John isn't deserving of a blanket? You know, can they say to him, we want to see your plane ticket so that we can give you a blanket?
Yeah, we want to see it. Yeah. Well, why does he? So they should be, I think they would prioritize the people that were on these planes. But I guess you make an exception for John.
Yeah. And as Lorenzo it goes the shot back to Lorenzo and he's holding the ticket in his hand. You know, if you look back again at the proposing couple in the background, so you see that, mm-hmm. that the fireman is no longer there, but the paramedic is still there, and he takes off his jacket. You know, again, very chivalrous. He wants to help her out. You know, he just proposed, so he wants to make sure that she's not gonna be cold. So here, take my jacket. We'll have to wait until tomorrow to find out what he actually does with the jacket, if he gives it to her or not. I'm assuming that they will still be in the background when we come back tomorrow with more information from Lorenzo. So we'll have to wait to see what
happens with this couple.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, throughout this small little conversation, when we do see Holly, she has this blank look on her face because she has no idea what's going on. But we'll get more into that tomorrow also.
This is going to be very confusing. It's a little bit like at the end of Groundhog Day when like everyone knows Fail and Rita is very confused. Like, you know, how do all these people know you? And it's a similar thing here. It's like all you did was come to the airport to pick me up. And, you know, there's this guy in the golf cart. There's these cops pulling up. Like, how does everyone know you? What have you been doing today?
That's right.
And John's going to be like, oh, you know, the same old.
Yeah. Just dealing with terrorists in the airport. But they told us there were terrorists in the airport.
they told us they were terrorists in the airport.
Yeah. All right. You have anything else for this minute before we get into the script?
Nope. That's all the notes I had. Yeah.
All right. So once again, we're getting really close to the end of the script. We are on the final page of the script. Okay. And it says, you know, we start off with Sam Komen, and she goes, yeah, it sure is. And then it says she yanks out his power cord and watches John and Holly dreamily, which is, I think it works much better that she just puts her hand, you know, over the lens. I think that works a little better.
Mm-hmm.
It says on the airfield, the rolling stairs are put up on the planes and the passengers pour down the steps into arms of friends, families, and loved ones. Does this mean that according to the script, they let everyone onto the tarmac to go greet, you know, their loved ones that have now, come back. I don't know. It's a little strange.
That seems very unsafe.
I would think so.
I mean, we know why John's there, but just in general.
That's right.
I kind of assume these were just, you know, passengers, fellow passengers hugging each other. Maybe it was a family that was traveling together, or people that are brought together by the, sort of the stress of the moment. But if the script is saying these are other loved ones that have run out onto the runway.
That's right. Which is
that seems dangerous.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And then it says Thornburg on the ground, groggy. He raises his hand in supplication to the stewardess. She steps over and puts her high heels back on and walks off. That's all it says. You know, it's again, it's not the old lady. It's the stewardess. But I do like the fact that in the script, they mention the fact that she puts her high heels back on, meaning that you know, it's a known thing, at least not, it wasn't to us until now, but that you take off your shoes before the plane crashes or before the plane goes into an emergency landing. And then it says, McLean sets Holly down and kisses her, and they both turn at a honk. Marvin is there in an airport cart. He looks at the chaos. Damned if I'm cleaning up this mess. And that's it. Lorenzo's not even here. So again, it's a little bit strange. You know, I guess someone said, oh, maybe we need to, you know, give some sort of payback and show that Lorenzo's not really a bad guy.
Yeah, so he does have a soft spot.
Correct. All right, so I usually do this on Tuesday, but since Sean won't be with us on Tuesday, so every Tuesday we have a segment, which is now being done on a Saturday, called Disaster Tuesday, which I guess today we will rechristen Disaster Saturday, where I talk about some sort of plane crash that happened to some famous people that most of us are familiar with or not familiar with. And what I try and do is I try and find something that's somehow connected to my guest. You know, maybe geographically, or maybe has something to do with the movie that they did or something like that. Movies, you know, movie that they've done, movies by minute. So for Sean, I actually chose something that happened in, let's see how good you are. This is something that happened geographically close to you, relatively close. And it was a plane crash on July 16th, 1999. Do you have any guess as to what plane crash we might be talking about?
1999? No, I don't know.
Okay, so it's the crash of the plane with JFK Jr. off of
Martha's Vineyard. Oh, okay, yeah, all right. Yeah, Martha's Vineyard, all right.
Yeah. I don't think you should be ecstatic that we're going to be talking about a plane crash, but yeah.
Well, no, I'm not.
So JFK Jr., who was the president, the son of the former U.S. President JFK, he crashed into the Atlantic Ocean off of Martha's Vineyard on July 16, 1999. His wife, Carolyn Bessette, and his sister-in-law, Lauren Bessette, were also on board, and they both also died. He was flying a Piper Saratoga that took off from Essex County Airport in New Jersey, and they were planning on going over the coastline of Connecticut, Rhode Island, and landing in Martha's Vineyard. They did an extensive investigation to figure out what happened, and they came to the conclusion that he fell victim to spatial disorientation when he was descending over the water at night and ended up losing control of the plane. He was actually, he wasn't supposed to be flying at night, because he didn't have what's known as instrument rating. And he was only certified to fly under visual flight rules, meaning I guess you can't fly at night. The weather was pretty bad also, so that many landmarks around there were obscured. And, you know, visual flight was very challenging. But legally, he still was allowed to do it. You know, better judgment would have had him not do it, I guess you could say. This was a plane that he owned himself, and he bought it three months earlier. Basically, he was supposed to arrive at 10:05. He took off at 9:41, so it was basically just a half hour flight. It crashed nose first into the Atlantic, and when they were they were expecting the plane to have landed, and since it didn't get there, put out a call to try and find out what happened. And, you know, they weren't able to figure it out at first until they figured out that, you know, the plane was no longer on radar. And they start only at 4 a.m. did they actually start the search and rescue operation. And there were people who thought that Kennedy would find a way to stay alive despite being crashed. And they said he had the will to survive, and he had enough will for all three of them to survive. You know, once they started, you know, the operation, they realized that they weren't going to find it. They ended up finding, 3 days later, they found fragments of the plane. On July 20th, they actually identified the plane's fuselage, and they found, you know, parts of the plane were strewn. It was 120 feet deep, and it was scattered over 7.5 miles of the. So he was relatively close to Martha's Vineyard at the time when this happened. And on the 21st, they recovered the bodies of the three people in the plane, and they found out that all three died on impact. So yeah, very very sad. You know, there is. You know, the whole conspiracy theory about, you know, the Kennedy curse and all that stuff. And this didn't help.
No. Probably the best way to go, the dying on impact. You probably don't want it because they would. I'm sure they would have died soon afterwards if they had survived the impact. So probably best that it be. Well, it'd be better if it didn't happen at all. But if it was going to happen, better just be quick and get it over with.
Right. It's like I always think of the Challenger disaster, that they say that at least three of the astronauts were still alive, you know, when the shuttle hit the water, you know, so because they were going so fast, the others all blacked out, you know. So I don't know. Not a good story. But this whole segment isn't really supposed to be a uplifting segment, but I just thought it would be interesting.
Yeah.
But I've learned my lesson, and next season we will not be having this. So I appreciate everyone, you know, making it through this season, listening to all of these disasters. But I'm done with doing disasters. I'm going to try and keep things a little more uplifting, you know, throughout. Sean, you want to tell people once again where they can find Sean German?
Sure. Once again, I am from Next Scene Podcast, taking on pop culture one scene at a time. You can find us at nextscenepod.com and at nextscenepod on the social media. And again, coming up. For the end of this year, we will be covering on Pee-wee's Big Adventure, one 10-minute chunk at a time. So join us for that. Check it out.
All right. Very cool. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. You can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on Twitter. So once again, we will be back tomorrow, even though it's a Sunday. You know, we have 8 more episodes coming to you. So, you know, come back every day this week and through next weekend so that we'll finish everything by next Sunday. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages,